In this episode of GeoTalk, we get an update from the Albury Mega Event, we give you a quick way to discover trackables at an event, and we announce a competition where you could win a Magellan GPS. All this and more on GeoTalk. Welcome to episode 76 of GeoTalk. I'm your host, Darren, also known as the Spin Doctors. And what an interesting time of the year it is, August 2011. There's been quite a few changes in the geocaching world, and also here down under, there's been some very, very cold weather, in fact, snow over much of New Zealand. I hope it's not like that when I head over there next month. And the weather has, hasn't been warming up all that much. There's a tinge of spring seeming to pop into the weather here in Sydney, but certainly still cold and wet for most parts of the country, although the days are getting longer. That's always a good thing. Well, one of the big changes that's occurred in the last few weeks or days, I should say, is Groundspeak's introduction of the geocaching challenges section of their website. Now, this is kind of meant to be the replacement for virtuals, which people have been calling for since 2004 when they were taken off the geocaching website. Now, there are two types of categories that have been set up, action and photo. Both of them seem to sort of be locationless type challenges, I suppose you'd say. But although the photo ones, you could set up at a location. For example, I've noticed that some are saying, you will get a photo of yourself sort of with your finger on top of a landmark, I suppose. You could specify a particular landmark that people had to do, and then it would become a virtual cache of sorts. Now, it hasn't been received. Well, it's a bit hard to work out how it's been received, because there's certainly been a very vocal group of people that are anti-challenges, very, very anti-challenges. And I must say, it's actually disappointing to see the level of venom that's being directed at this. I think, Groundspeak have obviously sat down, they've thought about this for quite a while, because if you have a listen to the Podcacher podcast, you'll notice one of their midweek micros. I think it's might be episode 332.1. I'll have to double check that one. I'll give you a link in the show notes. But in that, the Groundspeak talk about how, or one of the reasons why they got rid of virtuals and why they just didn't bring them back as they did before, because it would obviously be silly to reintroduce something that they got rid of if the reasons for that hadn't changed. Now, the already within hours, I noticed on Friday morning of the challenges being launched, there was a website called Challenge Anarchy, which I must say was pretty childish. I mean, apart from the fact it was full of typing typos in it, the idea of setting up ridiculous challenges that are then having to be archived and voting down challenges that are being set up, I just think is petty and really a waste of time for everyone involved. Look, in summary, I think, the challenges, they've got a long way to go. There are some silly ones, although I actually thought Kiss a Frog was kind of a cute and funny one, given that Groundspeak's mascot is a frog, and I was quite happy to venture into my friends at the University of Sydney and see if I could actually find a real frog to kiss. But I think people, if you don't like it, don't do it and don't get involved in it. I think it's just silly to try and be anti and be negative. It seems to be a symptom of something that's going on in the world at the moment, where everything online, if you don't like it, then you out and out attack it. I think as a caching community, we just got to learn that if we don't like something, we just turn away from it. There are plenty of alternatives. You can ignore the challenges on the Groundspeak website. And if you want to do virtuals, you've got Groundspeak, you've got Geocaching Australia, and you've got Open Caching in which to do it. So people, let's just move on and not worry about it. Well, that's enough of my soapbox and rant time. Time to have a look at something that you can use that might be good for when you go to a geocaching event. Now, every time I go to an event, I always see people taking photographs or writing down the codes for all the trackables that are at an event. Now, I've decided I just don't get into it because it just takes too much time. But I recently discovered online a resource called Log Them All. Now, Log Them All has been created by a geocache by the name of Michel Canaki, or Cano, C-A-N-O. And what he's done is he's developed a website where you type in your Groundspeak username and your password and then all the trackable codes that you've discovered at that particular event. And then you can just type up a customized log, you know, to say, for example, you know, discovered at such and such an event, press the button and off it goes. It automatically logs them for you. Now, it will tell you which ones did and didn't work, so you can go back and fix those that didn't. It's a great little resource. I'll give you a link in the show notes from the geotalkpodcast.com. It's called Log Them All. Now, another website I recently came across is by a local cacher of ours by the name of Skydog. Also, his real name is Andrew. And Andrew has put together a website called progeocaching.com. Now, Andrew, a few months ago, put out a call, a survey as such, asking for people on their thoughts on geocaching and where it was heading and what they liked and disliked about it. And out of that, he's created this website, which he says, according to the aim of the site, is to seek to improve skills and attitudes towards geocaching and to help people to understand that it's not about finding plastic boxes in the outdoors. It's about voyages of discovery and having great experiences that enrich our lives. Now, it's an interesting looking website. It's very, very much in its infancy. It looks like Andrew is hoping to get together articles and interviews with people about some of the aspects of geocaching that really enrich the experience. And he's done a few videos from the US already and had one or two articles on it. Check it out at progeocaching.com. But what I thought I'd do is go through the survey that he conducted earlier this year. And one of the first questions was, why do you go geocaching? And according to the survey, the top four results were experiences I have in places I go, to go hiking with a goal at the end, for the thrill of chase and the sense of achievement, and lastly, it helps me to get exercise. Now, the next question, what are some of the things that you do like about the caches that you've done? The top five things were they go to places that would never have otherwise been, the scenic locations, the historical, educational, and interesting caches, the well-maintained caches, and the large containers. And he's got a big list here, a list of 10 things that people don't like about the caches they've done. And this is in order of popularity or unpopularity. They are uninteresting locations, micros and nanos, caches that are too easy, caches that are pointless, junk contents, poorly maintained caches that contain soggy logbooks, poor containers, inaccurate coordinates, too public with too many muggles, and placed in an inaccessible location. Well, I wonder if you all agree with that. Look, check it out, progeocaching.com, all put together by Skydog. Well, it's time now to head across the ditch over to New Zealand. Hey, that's where I'm heading next month. It's time to catch up with Alan.
Yeah, thanks Darren, and hi again from Radio Nut 50 with some caching comment from Hamilton, New Zealand. Well, last month I mentioned that I'd taken up an offer of a free Android phone from my cell phone provider and was playing around with some geocaching applications on it. Well, that small screen and fiddly buttons that I mentioned on the little Samsung i5503 finally frustrated me enough to go out and buy a real phone. I decided to go a bit over the top, though, with a decent processor and screen, and I'm now playing with my HTC Sensation. So I've loaded a number of applications. One I mentioned last time is GDAK, an application that reads your GSAK database. If, like me, you keep a database up to date with very regular personal queries from geocaching.com, then this application is just for you. All you have to do is copy your GSAK database onto your memory card in your phone, and this application reads it. With all those stored logs and information you've got in your database, and you can start caching immediately in whatever area you're standing at the time, without needing any network access. The best online application I've found is the GroundSpec app called Geocaching. I was a bit concerned about this when I first saw it, but it's fully integrated with geocaching.com, of course, and it allows reading of cache, web details, logs, etc., and then it'll jump to a map or a pointer and help you seek the cache. It does suffer a bit, though, from being about the slowest application to open on the phone. Perhaps this, though, is another symptom of that problem we see when we're opening geocaching.com. That's a pretty slow website to open. While caching online is a good way to ensure you're not searching for a cache that was disabled just yesterday and does allow reading of your very latest logs, there are many, many caches in areas that are not under 3G cell phone coverage. So heading off and assuming you can use this or a similar application could be fraught with problems. Unless you're only an urban micro-seeker, of course. You can get over this coverage problem, though, by viewing caches in the area you're heading to while you're still at home and saving them for offline viewing. But that does involve an element of pre-planning that perhaps defeats the purpose of caching by smartphone. The use of GDAK, though, gets over this issue, of course, because you have a file, in my case, of every New Zealand cache stored on board all the time, and it's as up-to-date as your last GSAK update. There's a number of other useful applications for puzzle caching. A couple of examples are GeoTools, or GCC, which stands for Geocaching Calculator. Both of these provide a fantastic range of data, like letter numbers in the alphabet with adjustable offsets, ASCII codes, numerical calculators, pi to an absolutely fantastic number of decimal places, all sorts of useful things for solving problems. There's also lots of other applications that are not strictly geocaching focused, but handy to have on board. For example, tide tables. When you're caching near coastal areas, you quite often come across some that says, only approach at low tide, etc. But if you're on holiday or travelling, when is low tide? Well, your phone will now tell you that. So it's all lots of fun, but even though this phone has a much more serious GPS, I'm sure the best tool for caching is still a real portable GPS receiver, like our Oregon or other similar units. Something that actually works under trees and gives a reasonably decent indication of your location near cliffs and buildings, etc. You do hear of people swearing of the accuracy of their smartphone, but I still challenge them to try a real GPS sometime. It could well make your hunting much more successful over time. And by the way, I did manage to sell the gift phone that I got for a larger sum than the telco would have offered in their cashback if I'd gone straight for the big phone first, so it wasn't too much of a loss. There's been a development of geocaching in our country. New Zealand has a new state. For a very small country that doesn't really have any states, we've been used to having our remarkably originally named islands of North Island and South Island listed as two states on geocaching.com. Well, we've always had a problem with our major outlying island group of the Chathams, which are across the other side of the 180-degree longitude and have problems being listed as part of New Zealand on geocaching.com and on many other mapping programs. Well, this problem's now solved. New Zealand now has three states, North Island, South Island, and Chatham Islands. And we already have two caches listed over there, so those serious state hunters had better start organising an expedition soon. Seriously, thanks to the folks at GroundSpec for listening to the submissions of those with the problem and making the change. Speaking of changes on geocaching.com, I note there's some new attributes available now for tagging your cache. Some are useful ones like tourist friendly and teamwork required. There's a little bit of a stretch though with one called seasonal access, but I guess it invites cache layers to clearly indicate that hides are dangerous in some seasons. But the last one's got me a little bit perplexed. It is front yard private residence. This seems to encourage one of the problem areas of caching. Hides that can easily get our hobby into disrepute, where the searchers are wandering over clearly private property, rustling through gardens, lifting stones and things. Certainly some caches are laid in the property of the hider, which is okay, but even when these are clearly stated in their description, it could encourage people to think this is the norm, and when seeking other caches stray onto private property and cause all sorts of mayhem. I don't really think it's a good idea to hide a cache in somebody's front yard. And now to the newest activity, somewhat related to caching, as introduced by Darren last month, Munzee. The searching for printed QR barcodes using smartphones. If you haven't heard of this one, do have a look at munzee.com. That's spelled Munzee. And if you've got a smartphone, look for the free application called Munzee. Well, I have had a try, but I've been a little bit frustrated. On a couple of occasions, I've been ready to go and found that just as I get to the hide, I'm unable to connect to the server. And you can't log the find unless you are. You need to be online and click your camera to be able to log a find. Searching's pretty basic too. My application only comes with a Google map or an aerial photo. You can't actually bring up a pointer that shows you the direction to go. So when you get very close to the Munzee, all you have is a couple of dots on the map and you've got to guess the last few metres. There's also no opportunity to write logs, with supporting comments about it or otherwise. So if you find a damaged Munzee or one in an inappropriate location, you don't seem to be able to tell anybody about it. Unlike geocaching, the hiding system is also uncontrolled, so there's scope for all sorts of inappropriate hides, including private property and schools and building damage, etc. But all those negatives aside, it certainly is an exploding hobby in this area, with two power trails of Munzees being published nearby Hamilton already. I see the Munzee.com site shows 400 Munzees in New Zealand now, 136 of them in this nearby Waikato area. I see there's 401 total in Australia at the moment, so there's a statistic worth noting. Okay, that's probably enough from here for the moment, Darren, so back to you.
I said at the start of the show, we've got a fantastic competition to run between now and the end of the year where you can win a Magellan GPS. It's a Magellan Explorus GC. You might have seen the review that I did early last year on the unit. I still think it's a fantastic unit. And I tell you, if my current Garmin unit ever fell over, I'd be picking up one of these straight away. Now, it's all thanks to geostuff.com.au, and Carl, who runs the shop, has put together this fantastic competition. Now, the aim of the contest is you have to guess who the mystery person is. Now, we're going to give you a series of clues over the next three podcasts, so in August, September, and October, and don't send your answer in until after the October podcast. So we're going to give you three different clues. We're not going to accept any entries until after the October podcast has been released. And to get your first clue, what you have to do is go to geostuff.com.au. So that's geostuff.com.au. And then in this search field on that website, type in the word geotalk. And once you've done that, that's where your first clue will be hidden. So go to geostuff.com.au and do a search for geotalk. Now, I should mention there's two prizes. They'll be randomly drawn from the entries that we receive between the October and November podcast. The first prize is the Magellan Explorus GC. And second prize is a one-year geocaching.com premium membership gift card. So that's all thanks to geostuff.com.au. Thanks very much, Carl. And get going and see if you can work out who it is from that first clue. Well, if you don't already know, there's a big event that's going to be occurring sometime next year, and I've got Greg from Wagga, part of the Farmers 5 group, to tell us all about it. Welcome to the podcast.
Oh, thanks, Darren. Glad to be here.
Now, you were involved with the mega event back in Wagga last year, but tell us about this event that you're planning for next year.
Well, Darren, It's all set for the start date of 4th of April 2012 at Albury Wodonga. We picked Albury Wodonga because it's got a population of about 90,000 people. It's certainly accessible from Melbourne, Sydney and Adelaide, and we felt that we had to put it in a place that was going to attract the best numbers to get a mega event.
Mm-hmm. And just to give everyone a bit of an idea, those particularly who might be from outside of Australia, how long roughly will it take to get to Albury Wodonga from Melbourne or Sydney?
It'll take about 5 hours from Sydney and about 3.5 from Melbourne.
Okay. So, yeah, as you say, it's fairly central. Now, this mega event's going to be the second one in the country. By the way, congratulations. It's just been listed on Groundspeak website as a mega event. You must be excited about that.
Well, we are, because we weren't expecting this sort of news till maybe the October or November of this year. So to get it in August, it's a thrill for the committee.
Yeah. All right, so the mega event's going to be occurring over the Easter weekend. Tell us, what can people who go to the event expect to see over the weekend?
Well, we've got, in the early plannings of the itinerary, we've got outside all the three meals per day, we will be supplying games in and around Albury. We'll be supplying some competitions within the event site itself, which is situated on 235 acres, so there's plenty of room for all sorts of activities. We've got free pony rides for the kids on the weekend. But the main gist of this year's mega event will be the fact that we're putting entertainment on each of the four nights. So they can cache all day and come back, sit down, relax in the entertainment area, stage there, lighting, sound, and there'll be something different on each of the four nights.
Now, you've got a listing already up on Groundspeak's website, and you've got a website. We better give the website a bit of a plug.
Yes, the website is www.ozmega.com.au.
Now, if people are planning to come along to the mega event next year, what can they do now and when can they register?
Well, the first thing they have to do is put in what's called a will attend on the cache page. It can be found on the top of the New South Wales section of geocaching.com, or they can look at it via a GC code, which is GC2Q4JF. And they put in a will attend, and that just gives the committee an idea of people attending, where they're coming from, and it helps us with logistics to organise the whole infrastructure for the event.
And obviously in the not-too-distant future, you'll be having a registration page for people to register online?
Yes, that should be ready to go sometime about mid-September, and in that registration page, they'll be able to supply us with all the details of how many's coming, their team name, first names for name badges and facilities to book camping and powered site positions.
Well, fantastic. Well, I've checked out the website. Looks like you've already got a lot of information in there. So once again, the website for people to find out more?
www.ozmega.com.au.
Excellent. All right. Well, look, thanks very much, Greg. Hopefully we'll speak to you again in the near future about what's happening with the Ozmega event in Albury Wodonga.
Very good. Thank you, Darren.
Spring has nearly sprung, but still we're a bit thin on the ground with events around the country. But first of all, we did get an email from Nathan at Cruising Blues, who said that they're holding a get-together in Mildura up on the near the Murray River in Victoria on Saturday the 27th of August. It's the Sunraysia Geocaching Dinner, and that's GC328W5. That's GC328W5. And that will be held next Saturday, or on Saturday the 27th of August. They also just wanted to give a quick plug for their night cache that they've got called Night Bunyip Hunt, which is GC306D7. That's the Night Bunyip Hunt. Other events that are occurring around Australia on the 28th of August is Breaking Camp by Cached and the Wackies. It's in South Australia on the 11th of September in the northern outskirts of Sydney, up at Goulston, is All Aboard the Geo Express by Calypso 62 and Geo Tutor. On the 18th of September is the Meet the Bundys event by Fudley, being held in Queensland. And on the 30th of September is It's a Blast at Emu Junction by Tim Walden over in South Australia. If you've got an event you want to plug, don't forget to give us a call or drop an email, geotalkpodcast@gmail.com. Now, last episode, we put out a call for your geocaching dog stories because we had a geo coin to give away thanks to jockaroo.com.au, another geocaching store in which you can pick up trackables and all other sorts of geocaching items. And thank you to jockaroo.com.au for that. And the winner for this competition is Sam Walkers. So thank you very much to Sam Walkers for sending in your story. We're going to send out that Snoopy geo coin out to you very soon. But here's the story that they sent in. They said, Sam is a trackable dog and he has a dog tag for his collar. And we realized that it's often best to hang the dog tag off their bag. That way, then when he's about to be discovered, strangers at an event don't suddenly try and grab him by the neck to get his tracking number. Sam goes caching with the team regularly, but he's restricted as to where he can go. They try to play by the rules, but caching doesn't always start where the muggles expect you to park the car, and the group don't always see the signs. They say on one of their trips, we started off walking through the state forest, a legitimate dog walk, but somehow crossed into the national park. Coming around a bend, we found ourselves suddenly in a campground. The sign that we were looking at the back, read No Dogs. A ranger was standing at a picnic table addressing a crowd of people nearby. What would you do? Well, we decided to avoid trouble and using Keisha stealth, melted back into the path. Caching for the afternoon was cancelled. As a hunter of plastic, Sam's no good. He always sniffs the wrong things, but he certainly does get excited for any excuse for a walk. So that's a dog story there from Sam Walkers. Thanks very much for that. And we'll be sending out that Snoopy Geo coin to you, thanks to jockaroo.com.au. Time to have a look at the GeoTalk mailbag. And don't forget, if you want to drop us an email, you just send it to geotalkpodcast@gmail.com. That's geotalkpodcast@gmail.com. And if we read it out and you haven't received one in the past, we'll post out a GeoTalk path tag to you in the mail. First of all, one from Captain Jack Sparrow over in Portland, Oregon. And it's great to have listeners over on the other side of the Pacific. They said they have a milestone to report on the 7th of August with the help of their friend Dean and their two sons, Team Bali. They found the last three caches they needed to crack 200 cache finds. They're out at St. Helens in Oregon visiting, and number 200 was GC2AN6F. Now, I love the name of this cache. It's CCCC. That's double C and then SEE and then SEA and then SI. So CCCC. It was a puzzle cache and it requires you to find two other caches to get the coordinates from it. A lot of fun. Thanks very much for that from Captain Jack Sparrow. Another email from Groovy Doo, by the name also known as Mike. He asked the question, how far would you go for an FTF? Well, for me, I think my last one was about 1.5 kilometres. But Mike has gone 200 kilometres to find a cache called Mully Grubber GC31DJ8 just to get that FTF. Now, the cache was listed on the 3rd of August and it had been 10 days and still no find. So Mike decided that he was glad to find an empty log and fill it out. So he headed out to the cache and returned to Junction Hill in Grafton, where he stayed the night and then cached in Yamba and the surrounds on the 14th. I'd like to say thanks to everyone in the area around Grafton for all the cache finds that he's had. We've got a couple of calls also that have come in, and we love your calls. We love getting your calls. So if you haven't already done so, why don't you save the number 02-800-5436. That's the GA Talk hotline. That's 02-800-5436. And you can call it in, just like Micah Paramatic calling in from the United Kingdom.
Well, g'day, Dan. It's Micah Paramatic calling in. I wanted to let you know I'm over here in the United Kingdom, just attended the UK mega event. It's been really good. About 1,500 teams registered and lots of side events. And then you know, people have been really friendly and interested in what's happening in geocaching in Australia. And so I'm over here with Aussie Bags, who caches out of Bundaberg in Queensland. And yeah, we're just calling to say hi to everyone and letting everyone know that all's going well. Thanks very much.
Well, thanks for that call, Micah Paramatic. Now, closer to the home, over in the Blue Mountains, it's Grizz4B.
Greetings, Bindock, from Grizz4B of beautiful Bathurst, on the other side of the sandstone curtain that separates Sydney from the rest of New South Wales. I was driving to the mountains today for a bit of climbing and caching, listening to a CD of GeoTalk podcast placed in a local cache by Altair. This reminded me about the GeoTalk phone number, where we can leave stories about special caches. So I'm calling about one that I just found this evening. Now, I enjoy searching for caches that haven't been found in quite some time. There's just something about finding a long-lost cache that's particularly satisfying, especially if there have been a number of DNFs logged against it. Today I was on the trail of a multi called Dam Dam by Horror King, just west of Lithgow. Starting at Lake Lyle, this cache visits a couple of easy waypoints at man-made lakes in the area, but despite its simplicity, it hasn't had a log against it for more than a year and a half. After finding the required waypoints over the last few weeks, I took my time about it. It certainly could be done in a single session. Today I went to find the final, and I was rewarded with spectacular sunset views and a logbook that's been waiting for 630 days for me to come along. That's probably a time frame unheard of in the metropolitan area. I recently discovered a number of multis in the area that have been forgotten by caches passing through, and I just wanted to recommend some of these more time-consuming caches to frequent travelers. It's not so difficult to pick up a waypoint or two each time you pass by, and the ultimate find is that much more satisfying and usually has a bit more effort put into it compared to a standard traditional. So to all those cachers out there, come and log those lost caches, but leave a few of them for me. Thanks.
And of course, it wouldn't be a GeoTalk if we didn't get our regular call in from Darth Trader up in the Hunter Valley.
G'day, GeoTalk. It's Darth Trader just calling in. I've approached the Emperor early in the afternoon today and requested a leave of absence to do some caching, and she said yes. So I noticed that when we come up the New England Highway through Tamworth up towards Queensland this time, we're spending a night in Warwick, that on the way through Stanthorpe there's been a trail, like a power trail put in of about 40 caches by Team Robbins. So I thought I need to have a go at that. Over winter my numbers have been suffering, so it might be good to get some numbers up. So I've hit them all. I've got 41 finds now in 4 hours, so I think that's pretty good. It's what, about one every 6 minutes, just by myself. So, and I've been logging them on the iPad. I've got some of that G3 connectivity as well with me, so I've been able to log them as I've been going. So that's going to save me a lot of time sitting down tonight when I get home to do just fill them out. But I only missed about three of them, and quite happy. I was really impressed actually with the whole series. It's called the Fruit Run up here around Stanthorpe area, and a good variety. I thought I might be in for a whole day of eclipse things, but not at all. Smalls, good sized caches, few of the. Oh, I'm not going to give it away, but I really enjoyed it. I didn't think I'd enjoy a power trail hitting that many caches in a day, but I really did. So I zipped past me milestone of 450. And got another 20 or so to go before I get to my 500 milestone. I'm looking for something big to do for that one. But, big thanks to Team Robbins for putting them together and maintaining them. I really enjoyed that. And if anyone else is heading through Queensland, make sure they stop around where the apples are and enjoy that series themselves. Okay. Thanks, GeoTalk. Bye.
Well, thank you very much to our callers. And just like anyone who emails into the show, if you give us a call, and don't forget that number 02-850-436, that's 800-50-436, we'll send you out a path tag in the mail. Now, last episode, we had a second competition running thanks to Geocaching in Australia magazine. We've got a copy to give to six lucky winners, and all you needed to do was tweet about GeoTalk podcast and about and use the hashtag Geocaching to be in the running. And thanks to everyone who did that, we nearly got over 100 followers. And if you aren't following us already on Twitter, we're not that active, but we do send the odd story here or there every each week. You can follow us at GeoTalk podcast. So that's the @ GeoTalk podcast on Twitter. And the winners for this competition, thanks to the Geocaching in Australia magazine, is D. Peters 101, T. Mether, Craig JW, Paul _ Myth, Edmund, and Alan Arthur. So those six winners, if you can get in touch with us, we'll drop you a direct message through Twitter as well. But thanks very much to those who entered. And don't forget, follow us on Twitter at GeoTalk Podcast, and we might have another competition sometime in the not-too-distant future. Well, that's all from this episode of GeoTalk. In our next episode, I'll be catching up with Alan with Radio Nut 50, and hopefully we'll be putting together a few highlights from my trip over to New Zealand. Until next time, safe geocaching.